Afternoon, everybody. Mike said, could be good morning as well if you're on the West Coast here in the U.S. My name is Carlos Pachon. I'm team lead for Greener Cleanups. And with me is Deb Goldblum. We're in the same room here. She's the lead for the ACM Standard Guide Major Participation. Together, we've been working with some of the other speakers to put this webinar together. You might have heard us in earlier webinars in 2013, 14, and 15. And there will also be a subsequent one, which Deb will describe with some more details. Anyway, on the screen is the agenda. This is what we pulled together to you. We tried to compress it based on feedback we received in earlier seminars. We're trying to keep it to an hour and a half. 1 hour was too ambitious, but we tried to shave half an hour off. So I will be doing an introduction and summarize some recent developments here in the agency and elsewhere with respect to tools, policy, and guidance on green cleanups. I will then hand it over to Kate Chalfin of ASTM International. She's going to give a quick summary of the history of the development of the standard guide for green cleanups and some recent updates it's been subject to. You will then hear from Deb Goldblum, who will give you a primer or primer on the guide, a brief summary in 20 minutes, followed by a corporate perspective, so we called it. And Russell Downey has been kind enough to join us and describe their experience in applying the guide at a cleanup on the East Coast. Finally, one of the big announcements, I guess we could call him, from this webinar, Elise Owen. She is EPA Standards Executive here in D.C. She's going to be describing the agency collaboration with standard setting organizations and how that has resulted in the free availability of the standard guide in collaboration with ASTM. So she'll describe that. Following her presentation, we have a short moderated discussion. Throughout the webinar, you will be seeing little pop-up questions about your experiences, awareness, knowledge, expectations, etc. And we will be using those to moderate the discussion at the end. Thank you. So with that, I'll give you my presentation. Mike, are you going to switch me over? Thank you. So on my slide, here it is. So again, I will be covering the first 20 minutes or so. And we have been working in the agency on this concept of greener cleanups for a few years now, actually probably since about 2007. And over time, we have been building blocks and putting them in place. And over the recent months, a few more key pieces have fallen into place, and we thought this was a good opportunity to provide a webinar to update you on where things are, and that's what we're going to do. Ultimately, of course, what we're looking at doing is looking at environmental stewardship as an agency and building sustainability into our core mission through greener cleanups. That is, we want to ensure we have protective remedies with a lower environmental footprint, or that we achieve those protective remedies with a lower environmental footprint. So I'll now go to my second slide. So what are these three key points I want to highlight today? One is respect to policy, one is respect to tools to implement greener cleanups, and one is respect to the practice of implementing greener cleanups. The first point I want to cover today is to reemphasize how greener cleanups are consistent with agency policy and authorities. As I mentioned, we have been rolling out building blocks for this throughout the years. I'll highlight some, one from 2013, but a couple of more recent ones as well. In other words, what we're seeing is continued focus in the agency on advancing this concept of greener cleanups and putting pieces in place to make that happen. Second point I'll highlight is a tool. How do we actually, quote unquote, operationalize the concept of greener cleanups? And want to discuss a little bit the standard guide for greener cleanups, how we see it as an effective tool for all parties involved, site owners, consulting engineering firms, and regulators at all levels, state and federal. And a few pieces of we're putting in place to encourage, support, and require the use of the standard guide. Just a quick look at what we are seeing as far as site cleanup consulting engineering companies increasingly incorporating greener cleanups into their standard operating practices. Okay, so I'm going to move to the next slide. Now, why this continued focus in greener cleanups? Well, there's a couple of important data points that help communicate why we continue to focus on this concept. The first is the fact that approximately 51% of the U.S. population lives within 1 or 3 miles from a RCRA corrective action, a brownfields, or a Superfund remedial site. Why is that important? Because many of these sites may require cleanup work. And as we've discussed in earlier webinars, a lot of the work we do to protect human health and environment from exposure to contaminants require the type of work that's necessary has an environmental footprint of its own. And that environmental footprint is often a local question and often has impacts on the local environmental quality. That's the figure on the right. A couple of years ago, 3 years ago maybe, we had a PhD chemist, atmospheric chemist. She had did an internship here, and her project consisted of using a modeling tool that she was fine-tuning as part of her dissertation to simulate tropospheric ozone production at a fictional site. So created basically a cubic mile. We provided her with the inputs, which are typical equipment that could be used at a large remediation site. And she modeled it using quote-unquote conventional or maybe old yellow iron at that time. And the result is this figure we see here. The blue line is a production of the ozone at the site. Ozone is produced through a photocatalytic process of the nitrogen oxides from the emissions and the oxygen in the atmosphere. And during daylight, that's when we see an increase in ozone concentrations, and at night, they're abated a little bit. But basically, that blue line, you see a continued increase in ozone production in this scenario, which I recall, the paper is on Fluent, by the way, if you want to download it, but it was in a type of thermal inversion situation. On the other hand, the red line is consider the application of one of the selective catalytic reduction on that equipment, and I believe there were maybe some other clean diesel best practices involved. And what we see is that decrease in the tropospheric ozone. And the green line, by the way, is the National Air Quality Standards of 0.075 parts per million for tropospheric ozone. The point is, the work we do to protect human health and environment has an environmental footprint. That environmental footprint could be reduced through the application of best management practices. Putting these in place will reduce, will help us achieve that protectiveness with a low environmental footprint, and it could be to the benefit of a significant percentage of the U.S. population. Okay, so we go to the next slide. So where are we now? The first thing I wanted to discuss is the strong agency support for greener cleanups. Three main points or indicators of support I wanted to highlight. The first is, for a few years now, at least two iterations of the agency's strategic plan, greener cleanups have been identified, and they are identified in the current 2014-18 strategic plan, specifically stating that EPA's hazardous waste programs are working to reduce the energy use and environmental footprint during the investigation and remediation of hazardous waste sites. That is a program-neutral statement, as is the next one, which was actually released in 2013. And this one is specific to the assistant administrator who runs the cleanup programs, now called Office of Land and Emergency Management. He issued this policy guide back in 2013 that states that he recommends that regions and OSRA programs facilitate and encourage use of ASTM standard guide for greener cleanups in our efforts to implement greener cleanup practices. So that's policy direction to program managers in the regions to facilitate and encourage the use of the guide. And the final piece is this new one, which we have been working on for a few years now, which is specific to the Superfund program, and that is consideration of greener cleanup activities throughout the CERCLA process. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. So this memo to the regions, which came out very recently in early August, last month. It's actually signed by four office directors in, here in headquarters, in the enforcement program and in the Superfund program. And that's quite rare for four office directors to sign a memo. It's an indication of the support behind it. Basically, what this memo does, it links back to the basic circle authorities, but neither modifies nor amends the NCP. So it's not creating any new, and you can find some clarification on what the authorities are in relation to CERCLA and the NCP in the consideration of greener cleanup activities in the Superfund process. It includes, it could be boiled down, it's several pages long, but it can be boiled down to three major points. The first three major recommendations. The first one is to consider greener cleanup measures in the life of a project. So it goes into a certain level of discussion with respect to consideration of greener cleanups in the remedy selection phase, but of course it looks as well into the remedy implementation phase, which is where a lot of the best management practices or best practices as they are identified in the memo can be implemented. In other words, where we actually, where we achieve the actual footprint reduction on the implementation of the remedy. The second point it makes is that we can either evaluate best management practices or best practices applicable to a project and put these in place, or there may be a need for an environmental footprint. A lot of the Superfund remedies are large and complex, and conducting an environmental footprint analysis helps us identify what the largest footprint components are and what the key contributors are, and better, that way we can better target best management practices or best practices to reduce that environmental footprint. So it discusses that process a little bit. And then finally, of course, it addresses both fund lead and responsible party lead sites. So these recommendations are universal to all. It does not, there's no distinction between them. The guidance also provides definitions, some key definitions, and it includes at least seven references I was able to count to the ASTM standard guide that we're discussing today. Okay, next slide. So that might have gone too far. Let me check. No, that's right. Okay, so the next slide is another recent quote-unquote building block that's come in place, and it has to do with the Superfund remedial acquisition framework. It's a whole different discussion there, but the Superfund program is undergoing a large strategic change in the way it does contracting, and it's releasing new requests for proposals on three major project contract types, contract suites, they're called, two of which are already out there. The first is the Remediation Environmental Services Contract, RES, and that one was just released earlier this month. So that is new. And the other one, Environmental Services and Operations, I think that one's already closed, but those are the two major contracts that included language in the Statement of Work requirements, both under Section 1.4 with respect to green remediation. The sample language I extracted from them is the contract that shall explore and implement green remediation strategies, and both of them refer to ASTM International Standard Guide for Greener Cleanups. Again, we believe these are important. We want to send a signal to consulting engineering firms that we expect to be seeing more of these practices at the cleanups we fund. The Superfund program, the lake, directly funds a significant amount of cleanup on the order of $400 to $500 million a year. And in fact, these contracts, the RES contract is for about up to $1.57 billion over 10 years. So it's a significant amount of money, and we want to be clear that we expect to be looking for green cleanups as we roll these out and move forward. Okay, next slide. But we're not alone in this. There are a lot of state partners also moving forward with green cleanups. I just selected four states in the East Coast, Central Section, and West Coast, just to highlight some examples. The first one is Massachusetts DEP. You may know from previous webinars we've had that the Massachusetts DEP Greener Cleanup Guidance reference this day of the ASTM guide as a means of reducing the environmental footprint. They have been rolling out training, policy guidance, and in fact, quite recently, in the last earlier this month, they awarded the first Green Cleanup Recognition Award that was handed out to an LSB at their annual meeting on September 16th. It was an LSP, licensed site professional, Mr. Bobson, working for the environmental consulting firm Brown and Caldwell in Andover, Massachusetts. So they conducted a cleanup, they applied the standard guide and selected a series of BMPs, including closed-loop gray water washing system for decontamination of trucks, implementing an idle reduction plan, and using alternative drilling methods to minimize drill waste. So congratulations to Mr. Potson and to Massachusetts DEP for getting that first award in place. Another couple of examples, Illinois EPA, they rolled out a series of pilot studies of the application of the standard guide. They produced those reports, published those reports on their website. They have a Greener Cleanups website under their agency site. And one of the awardees is one that we'll be all talking about briefly in the city of Chicago. It was a brownfields cleanup. Anyway, rolling around in Ohio, our Region 5 folks have been very active. They've been developing and implementing quite a bit of training in collaboration with the state. And then finally, moving on to the West Coast, just to mention that Oregon put in a Green Cleanup policy back in 2011, one of the early starters, and the first Superfund application of the standard guide took place at a site that is in Oregon. Okay, so move on to the next slide. So a lot of what I've talked so far, and I have very little time to do it, but I've talked a lot about policy stuff and contracts and relatively dry material, but I also want to take the opportunity to highlight some examples of what we are seeing, best management practices, greener cleanups being applied across the country. And I took this cross-section of sites representing multiple cleanup programs, multiple regions, multiple types of best management practices, just to highlight some of what we are seeing out there. The first one on the left is Northridge Estates. That's a Superfund cleanup in Region 10 in Oregon near Klamath Lake. And they applied the standard guide in to identify BMPs they could implement as it went into remedy design. And they put a lot of those in place, including, for example, choosing native vegetation, needing little or no irrigation. This was an asbestos site in soil, avoiding potential exposure pathways, a lot of soil movement there, a lot of restoration work. The other one on the right is actually it's a Boeing facility, and they're implementing their PCB cleanup, so this is under TSCA. And the report they submitted for this site, which is a 777 manufacturing facility, they included the analysis they had conducted, consistent with the ASTM standard guide, and the series of BMPs they have selected to reduce the footprint of this cleanup, which included not only including some idling, idling prevention, minimization, as well as installing earthen burns to prevent runoff or run-on from the excavation area, so water-related BMP. The next one down, this is the site that received an award from the Illinois EPA, from the governor, I'm sorry. I don't have the name of the award with me right now. I had a note here, but I can't find it. But anyway, they received a state award. Here it is. It's the Whitney Young Library site as part of the City of Chicago Public Building Commission. And they were doing some work downtown, and they applied the standard guide, selected a series of BMPs, including this one here on reducing water use and minimizing material handling. And they received the 2015 Illinois Governor's Sustainability Award for the work conducted at that site. And that award was announced at the Brownfields Conference in Chicago that same year. And then finally, the last one, I won't go into in too much detail because this is a RCRA corrective action site. I have some example of land and ecosystem BMPs, but Russell Downey is going to be talking in more detail about that site. But again, I wanted to make sure I provided an example of a corrective action, TSCA, Brownfields, and a Superfund site, at all of which the ASTM standard guide has been used to identify, select, and implement PMPs. And then my last slide, this what I mentioned earlier, which I think is really important, how the private sector is, especially on the both site owners and consulting engineering firms, are picking up on this and starting to incorporate both the ASTM standard guide and or, for example, footprint, environmental footprint capabilities, and documenting and sharing their experiences and marketing their capabilities in that area. So this is based on an internet search of sites of companies that either identify themselves as having completed these sites or market themselves as having capabilities in implementing greener cleanups. And we have been doing this for a while, and it's nice to see that if I did this again next year, I would definitely not be able to fit all of them. And I wasn't able to fit all of them here. I just tried to get a bit of a distribution across site owners, such as Boeing, and I mentioned Boeing's work earlier on, and others out there, as well as large, medium, and small consulting engineering firms that are incorporating the concept of greener cleanups into their standard operating procedures. So with that, I believe that is my last slide. Actually, there's one more. But in closing, all this is an indication that at EPA cleanup programs, we see greener cleanups as a means to build sustainable practices into our core mission, which is to protect human health and the environment. And in moving forward, we see across all programs, we see a greater reliance on applying the standard guide as the tools of operationalizing that concept. Thank you very much. And with that, Mike, I if you could prepare, I think I'm going to be monitoring the transitions, if I recall right. So we are ready to move on to the next one, which is, will be Kate Chalfin from ASTM International. You know, if I may say, we will be taking some questions at the end. We tried to compress this, so we'll not be taking questions directly, but we'll roll through them at the end of the webinar. However, please answer the survey questions that are coming up as we go through this. And with that, we're on to Kate. Kate, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All yours.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Kate Chalfin. I'm a staff manager here at ASTM International, and one of the committees I manage is E50 on Environmental Assessment, Risk Management, and Corrective Action. And, of course, today we'll be talking about the corrective action part of that committee. And the corrective action subcommittee, E50-04, is the one that developed the standard guide for greener cleanups, E2893. And what I'll be talking about today with you are just some of the benefits of standards development through ASTM, a brief standard timeline of the standards development process within ASTM and how that aligns with what the Greener Cleanup Task Group did. I'll then talk about a few of the updates that were included in the most recent revisions to the Greener Cleanup Guide. And lastly, I'll talk a little bit about how to use E2893, how to access it, how to use it, and how to post your results once you've used the guide. So some of the benefits of working through ASTM and standards development. ASTM is a consensus standards organization. And we have very inclusive teams. That's one of the benefits, is that the task group that worked on the Greener Cleanups Guide was made up of all different individuals from different organizations, both government agencies and private organizations. And, of course, the task groups do not, you do not need to be an ASTM member to participate in the task group. So that means you don't need to be a member of ASTM or Committee E50 to work on the drafting of a new standard or the revision of an existing standard. So that allows us to bring a lot of different expertise into the process. We also have a collaboration area where you can share drafts for ongoing development. So that allows the task group, in between the twice a year meetings that most committees have, that allows them to hold virtual meetings and have this shared collaboration area to post drafts, post related documents, articles, start discussion threads, and comment on the drafts throughout the year to make the process much more efficient than it used to be. Another benefit is within the ASTM process, you have an individual voice. So there's one vote per voting interest within ASTM. And each negative must be addressed. So that part of the consensus process means that any negative that's received on either the sub or main committee ballots must be addressed by the task group in one way or another. And we feel that that consensus process is really what develops quality documents within ASTM. So next I'll talk a little bit about the standards development process. And this is an image I just created to give an overview of the steps in the standards development process here at ASTM. When we talk about a timeline for standards development in ASTM, it really varies with every activity. I've seen standards approved in a period of 18 months and others that have gone on for 10 years based on different influences within the process. And when we talk about specifically the Greener Cleanup Guide, that process began in 2009 with that very first box, Contact ASTM. That's when EPA contacted ASTM with a proposal for this new standard. Then the task group registered a work item through the ASTM process and worked on that draft standard. So the task group came together both through virtual and face-to-face meetings and worked on the draft standard from in 2009 and 2010. Next arrow within the diagram here, the subcommittee and then the main committee ballots. Those ballots took place from 2010 through 2013. That means the task group was putting the item on ballot. They were receiving comments and negatives from the subcommittee and main committee members. And then the task group was coming together to decide which of those comments they wanted to incorporate and reballoting the standard a number of times during that three-year period. The guide was then approved, had an approval date, and was published in November 2013. Since then, the task group has focused on training surrounding the guide. That began in April 2014, soon after the release, and continues through today. The task group got together back in the fall of 2015 to revise the existing standard. That was balloted in October 2015 and April 2016 with revisions, and it was updated on the website as E2893-16, which is the current version you'll see and that we're talking about today, and that was updated on the website in May 2016. With all ASTM standards, those last two numbers, the 16, designate the last year in which the standard was revised and is a way to keep track of the different versions of the standard. So that, in brief, is the ASTM standards development process. When we talk about the specific updates that were included in the most recent revisions to E2893, some of the revisions included streamlining the BMPs. I believe the task group reduced the number of BMPs by about 25%. They also merged together two of the BMP categories, bringing it down to 9 categories instead of 10. As another way to streamline that process. There were also a few other revisions in the steps of the guide to improve the process, to add more references. And lastly, there were some structural changes that were made to the self-declaration, which is the self-reporting form that goes along with the standard guide. So the last thing I'll talk to you about this afternoon is how to use E2893, how to gain access to the guide. You can do that by either going to the ASTM website. If you're an individual that would like to purchase a copy of the standard, you can go to the website link there under individuals. That will take you to a page where you can purchase both the standard itself as well as two digital adjuncts that are available for sale along with the standard guide. And those two adjuncts are, one is an Excel spreadsheet, which includes all of the best management practices and is a usable spreadsheet where you can enter in and utilize the BMPs that you'll be using as part of your cleanup. And then the second one is a writable PDF form, which is essentially the report form that you would fill out as part of doing the following the steps to the guide. And those are the two additional adjuncts that are available with the standard. Once you've completed use of the guide to post the report to the ASTM Public Library Greener Cleanup Public Library. You could email me. My email address is here on the slide. To view the reports of those who have already completed the guide and posted their report forms and best management practices, you can go to the link shown here on the ASTM website, and you'll be able to download the reports that are publicly available of those who have completed. If you have any questions, of course, I'll be here for the entire webinar, and you can always use that email address you see on the screen there to ask questions about ASTM, Committee E50, or E2893. And if you'd like to take part in future revisions, you're certainly welcome to join the task group through Deb Goldblum or to join Committee E50 and take part that way. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Kate. You mentioned that if you are with the EPA, US EPA, and on an agency computer, if you click on that link, the agency does have a corporate a contract with ASTM, so the system will automatically identify you as an EPA staffer and redirect you to the internal agency place to download the ASTM guide. So again, we already have a contract, so we don't have to pay for them individually. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm sorry. I should also mention, as an office, if you do not have a subscription and you're interested in access for the entire office, you can email that address there, sales@astm.org, to get a much lower rate for everyone in the office to have access to both the standard and the adjuncts. It'll be much more reasonable than purchasing them individually. Thanks.
Thank you. So with that, I hand it over to Deb Goldblum, and she's going to give you that primer. Walk us through the actual use of the guide at a project, what it looks like, how it's structured, and what kinds of decisions can be made in that process. So, Deb?
Thanks, Carlos. I've been working on greener cleanups for about 10 years, and during that time, I've learned there are a lot of misconceptions about what greener cleanups are or aren't, so I'm going to quickly step back a moment before I get to the standard. So just some myths and truths. Greener cleanups are not just about greenhouse gases. Greener cleanups are about a variety of impacts. Some are local, such as particulate matter that Carlos talked about, or water use, and others are global, like greenhouse gases. Greener cleanups are not about the greenest technology. It's not like if you do phytoremediation, you have a greener cleanup. Greener cleanup is about reducing your environmental footprint at each step in the cleanup, from investigation to long-term monitoring. Greener cleanups and green remediation mean the same thing. You say tomato, I say tomato, it really doesn't matter. And greener cleanups are integral to more sustainable cleanups. And by that I mean the longer, broader view. So the goals of a cleanup are at a site level. And these goals are essential for protecting human health and the environment now and in the future. And what greener cleanups does, it makes us think about a little bit outside the box and look at the energy, material, and resource use associated with cleanup activities, and then we take our actions to minimize that footprint. So EPA grouped these ancillary impacts into a framework known as the core elements, and those core elements got attached to a policy that came out in August 2009, and that's the Greener Cleanup Principles, that says cleanups can be viewed as green. However, we can implement protected cleanups that are greener by increasing our understanding of the environmental footprint and taking steps to minimize that footprint. And we can improve our decision process by evaluating activities relative to those core elements. So this is back in the 2009 time period, and at the time, people were basically using two approaches to do greener cleanups. Okay, one of them is to use BMPs, which Carlos mentioned. Okay, so what you do basically is you look at what your cleanup objectives are for that phase. By phase, I mean from cleanup site investigation to remedy selection, design, long-term monitoring. You look at your conditions, you select BMPs, you apply them, and you reduce your footprint by applying the BMPs. You can do that at any site. And then there's the other approach, which is to use a quantitative evaluation. And what a quantitative evaluation is, you are compiling information on the material use, water use, energy use, transportation for cleanup activity. And then you crunch numbers using inventory data sets to estimate contributions, whether they be emissions or resource use, to the core elements. And people do that through environmental footprint analysis, which EPA supports a tool called CEFA, the Spreadsheet for Environmental Footprint Analysis, or through full-blown life cycle analysis. And by doing a footprint or a quantitative evaluation, what it does, it helps you focus on activities that are making the greatest contribution to the environmental footprint, help you select those BMPs in. You can estimate the impacts from implementing BMPs, and you can also identify hidden contributors. And by that, I mean, you might think that, oh, by doing this one technique, I'm really going to lower my energy footprint. But in fact, there's the hidden contributor of a big water input into that approach. So quantitative evaluation, they tend to be most appropriate for large and complex sites because it takes more knowledge, it takes a little more level of effort. There's also greater opportunity for footprint reductions can be worth that effort because on a bigger complex site project, you have more moving parts, you have more options. But at the end of the day, you end up still applying best management practice and getting a greener cleanup. And so that's what we've been doing. And we had this policy out there. And then we came up with a standard because the idea was we need to codify these practices that were happening. And so here's the overview of the standard. It supports the tenets of EPA's greener cleanup principles. And that was essential for agency support. As Carlos mentioned, the Assistant Administrator for the Cleanup Programs put out a memo a month after the standard came out supporting its use. It's applicable to individual or multiple phases of a cleanup. By that means you can use it for, say, just design your remedy, or for, say, a tank site where you go fairly quickly from investigation, no further action. You can use it for all phases. It identifies an employee's best management practices, which we talked about, but what's unique about the standard, it has over, I think it's 115 best management practices in a table called the BMP table, it's Appendix X3. These are practices that relate to a cleanup, not the reuse, and not like things not like recycling paper, which although very important, these are best management practices for doing cleanups, engineering types of practices. And the sources for all these best management practices, this is a team that worked hard to pull from the Kluwen fact sheets, from consultant checklists, from the core checklist. Also, when we had an area where we felt like there was a data gap, we brought in experts in the field and created this table. It offers an option for quantitative evaluation. As I said, those are for the large and complex sites. It doesn't teach you how to do a quantitative evaluation. What it does, it puts out an overarching framework that has the same steps. So whether you use CEFA or SiteWise or do a full-blown LCA, you're following the same steps. So it's a uniform step independent of the tool applied. And it promotes transparency through robust reporting. And that's just to keep everyone honest. What you need to do is self-declare your conformity with the standard. Standard speak. What you're doing is self-certifying compliance, you could say, and you need to put your results out there, make them publicly available, the process and outcomes across the core elements. So those are all good things, but there's one more thing, and the standard is, you know, historically you do one thing for a tanks program, and you might have a slightly different way that you do a voluntary cleanup program, and something different for a Superfund program, something different for RCRA and TSCA. But for the standard, it works at any site. It's program neutral. So what that does, it makes it easier for the regulators, it makes it easier for the regulated community, it makes it easier for consultants. So it complements any program. Now, the heart of the standard is the BMP process, and so that's what I'm going to focus on. And really, there's five steps for following this process. So before I talk about people implementing BMPs, this is just a little more robust. The first thing is an opportunity assessment. So, you know, you figure out what phase you're on, you look at your objectives, you see what's applicable BMPs. And this is a screening step. And you can use Appendix X3, the BMP table. You can use other BMPs that are out there. Next step is the BMP prioritization step. And what you're asking the person who's doing this is to think about prioritize your BMPs based on anticipated environmental footprint reductions. Now, you could do a quantitative evaluation, but you don't have to. It's based on professional judgment. And what's unique about it is it's going to be site-specific, so it can accommodate regional differences. So in one part of the country where the water footprint may be very important because it's arid, then that may be your highest priority. And in another part of the country, it may be particular emissions are the highest priority. So you just need to prioritize them. You select the best management practices you're going to implement. You provide rationale for those you don't select. You implement the BMPs. And then you document your thought process with the BMP at different tables. Oops, not too fast. So this is a slice of the BMP table. On the left, you'll see BMP category. And the reason there's a BMP category is we had at one point about 175 BMPs. It became a modules. We had duplicates. We needed a way to organize it. And so we came up with this term. They're groupings based on topics or activities. So, for example, you see here power and fuel. Other groups are solid and liquid waste, sampling and analysis. The next column is the best management practice. Then there's a column with the core elements. So that tells you where you're getting your footprint reductions, and you'll see some BMPs have footprint reductions across maybe one, two, three, four core elements. And then there's a column with filters for remediation technologies, and there are actually 11 remediation technologies. So, for example, if you're going to take a removal action, you could use the site excavation and restoration remediation technology, filter for that, and it'll help you streamline your review. So first step, you go through the BMPs, you create a list that are applicable to your site scenario, and you make a table. So here's my table. I don't have actual names, but let's just say I had 5 BMPs. I said you're not constrained to what's in the BMP table. You can do others. And the other thing you need to do, if there's a BMP if it's required by law, you need to add that. So you got your BMPs. And that's your opportunity assessment. And you go to the next step, prioritization. Let's say you think about which one is going to have the greatest environmental result in reducing your footprint. And that's based on professional judgment. So I'll go through them and I say, oh, BMP 1 high, 2 medium, 3 high, low, medium. And then if you're me, you're going to click correctly here. You're going to sort them. So I put the highs at the top, mediums in the middle, lows at the bottom. That's step 2, your prioritization step. Then we go to step 3. And that's when you select. So what you're going to do is obviously select all that you can. And the key is you're going to provide rationale for those you don't select. And that's, again, so people understand your thought process. So you might not implement one due to cost. Here's one you need to, although low, you need to implement because it's required by law. Another one you may not implement because it's not very effective. Some people choose to add an extra column providing more specific rationale. So, for example, you want to recycle scrap metal components from a remediation project, but there's no nearby recycler. So whatever level of documentation is acceptable, you just need some documentation of why you're not implementing it. Then we go to BMP implementation, and you implement the selected BMPs. But as everyone knows, sometimes things happen in the field. So, for example, you're planning on using a local driller, and then that local driller is not available. And say that's BMP 6. So all you do is take that BMP off your list. And when you get to documentation, when you get to documentation, things don't work. You document it. And then in this case, it was stuff happens. So that's what happened in the field. It's fine. So again, it's just so it's a clear process. Everyone can see what's happening. The next step is reporting. So there's just one more component I want to, well, actually, before I go to that, I want to talk about why the BMP process is different than just selecting one or two BMPs. Sometimes early on we see people say, hey, I'm doing a greener cleanup and I select 2 BMPs. And that was one of the reasons to do the standard. We wanted to have a uniform protocol that everyone follows, more robust, not cherry picking. And the other key thing about the BMP process, it helps people think differently. Carlos and I have gone out there, we do training, and we see people go through this process. And when you go through the process and start thinking about, is this high, what are my implications, what are my trade-offs, then that changes the way people think and reduces the environmental footprint of cleanups. So when you get some documentation, there's really two steps. You're going to have a BMP table for each cleanup phase that, where you follow the standard. And then you're going to have a second step, which is reporting. And reporting is when you make it publicly available. And all you need to do is you create a BMP table, as I said, for each phase. And then you're going to have a site summary. And as Kate mentioned, there's an adjunct. Okay, that just means sort of an appendix there, and it's Appendix X2, and that has the template, and you fill that information. It's a general summary about the site. You put down that. You have your tables. You describe your outcomes across the core elements, and you self-certify. And as Kate mentioned, you could also post it on the ASTM website by just contacting Kate Chalfin. So the uses of the standard are widespread. It's a protocol, and we're seeing it in all different ways. It's a protocol that's being applied at sites across every cleanup program. It's also a tool, so you can just look at BMPs and start looking and think about how you can reduce your footprint. And it's also a reference document. As Carlos mentioned, we're seeing it used in policy, in contracts. It's also being used in legal documents. And what this does, by having a standard, it defines greener cleanups, so we all know what it is instead of just a bunch of anecdotal stories. It also provides a level playing field, so it distinguishes those that follow the ASTM process from those that just pick a BMP and say, hey, I did a greener cleanup. And it promotes culture change. So the ultimate goal for the agency is that, you know, we've been doing cleanups for a long time now, and we can do them better or more thoughtful with a lower environmental footprint if we think about it. And this is the tool to make it happen. So, in closing, this is the industry standard for green remediation, and as a result, we'll have protective cleanups with a smaller environmental footprint. And now I'm going to pass it back to Carlos.
Thank you very much, Deb, for that walkthrough. I know you were compressed on time. And as you mentioned earlier, we will be having a more detailed webinar on walking through the use of the standard guide, possibly in early December. So stay connected and on gloom.org/greenremediation or epa.gov/greenercleanups if you want to participate in that one. So with that, I move it on to our corporate perspective. And as I mentioned earlier, we have Russell Downey, who's offered to provide his experience with the application of the standard guide at a corrective action cleanup in New England. So, Russell, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. Hey, everyone.
Great. Mike is making the switch for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Russell.
Oh, oops. Looks like I backed up a few. So what I'm going to do today is give you a corporate perspective on greener cleanups. This is for a record corrective action site in Connecticut, working with both US EPA Region 1 and then the state of Connecticut. And the presentation outline will be our approach to sustainable greener cleanup. Some of this came before the ASTM standard came to fruition, but I would say that ASTM standard articulated it much better than what we can, and it's been very useful for going back and doing some of our scoring, and I'll mention that as well. Again, I'll give you some site background of this and selected remedy. I'll talk to you a little bit about the implementation of the remedy using greener cleanup design and execution and the best management practices, and then just a couple slides on project recognition for greener cleanup. So why do sustainable greener cleanup? You know, for a company, you know, is it going to be a lot more expensive? Is it going to be, you know, more of a hassle regulatorily? And the answer to all that is no. We have a core value that's respect for society. And what we have found is that communities really want properties returned to beneficial use. That gets to the one ASTM core value of just the land and ecosystem. The other thing that's really important is experience has shown that given the option, communities are receptive to safe and sustainable solutions. So what is the value proposition? It's to reduce the environmental footprint. It's to increase the social responsibility and the community acceptance. It's to obtain the regulatory acceptance. It's to reduce the remedial construction and long-term cost. And then there is an economic benefit that will be gained by the community, especially putting the land into productive use or even for the ecosystem if you restore it. And then you achieve the cleanup. So some general principles I'd like to talk to you about is, first of all, you start with the conceptual site model and you plan at the end in mind. And you need to really think in terms of life cycle. You think early on, you know, how can I incorporate greener cleanup in terms of investigation, you know, looking ahead to the remedy itself for design and execution, and then really the long-term OM&M. And the point of this is it's a continuous process. It doesn't just stop. So even though we're primarily done with constructing most of our remedy at the Connecticut site, we're still going to be looking at greener cleanup continuously as we do our long-term OM&M cycle as well. We want to identify and engage the appropriate stakeholders early in the process. We want to consider the environmental footprint and the design throughout the life cycle, as just mentioned. To the extent possible, we want to preserve, enhance the assets of the property. You know, if you're on a river, you know, it's within the river watershed. It's maybe having that transition zone between another piece of your property that may be better used commercially. But it's to really look at the big picture and your adjacencies as well. We want to seek the opportunities to incorporate the greener cleanup techniques in design and execution. And then again, constantly look at where we sit with respect to the environment and with the community and other land uses. So I'll talk a little bit about background of the selected remedy. This slide here shows a couple things, but one is we have the big aerial photo. I don't have my pointer, I can't find it. But what it has here is the site before the remedy was put into place. You can see a paved area on the left side of that aerial photo, which is more of the commercial development area. And then the right side, closest to the river, will be an ecosystem that we want to develop. The other thing we're looking at is it just has a long history. You know, back in the 1800s and the early 1900s, it manufactured bricks. Right after World War II, it had a lot of industrial activities up to the 90s. And then it's been in the investigation and remediation stage since then. And then looking to the future, we're looking to put it into productive reuse. So for post operations, again, a long history. There's been a lot of different types of releases. In some cases, the releases happened lower and then it was filled in, so it was discovered later. And there's a dense non-aqueous phase plume of a very high concentration contaminants, which we had to address. And what was mentioned by Carlos and Deb earlier is, you know, you still have to protect the human health, the environment. You got to comply with ARRs. You have to look at all your modifying criteria if you're a CERCLA or RCRA site. But on balance, you can certainly weave in the design, everything you can do for greener cleanup and looking at sustainability. And this site has a lot of challenges. It had VOCs, SVOCs, PCBs, and some metals. Again, it had a very significant Dean Apple with three-phase contamination that we had to address, and a lot of wastewater residuals at the site. And the regulatory drivers was a record corrective action order, and then within the state of Connecticut, they have a land transfer program that if you do a merger even, that could trigger, you know, following their regulations as well for cleanup. As far as the cleanup design and construction considerations, you know, we looked at the footprint, we looked at how to remove a lot of mass and do it smartly. We looked at the impact of nuisances to the community, worker safety, the beneficial reuse of the site, certainly public support for the remedy, and this is very important, and I'll touch on it later. And then what came out after we submitted our remedy and after it was selected, with respect to energy, air, water, land and ecosystems, and materials and waste, that's very well articulated and spelled out in both US EPA guidance and the ASTM standard. And what I've done in some of my slides is I put in some yellow highlighting some of the key core elements that we were touching upon But as Deb said, in many cases, you know, you're touching on many of them as you implement some of these greener design elements. So on carbon footprint, we looked at a number of different alternatives. Ultimately, if you look at this slide, CMA, which is corrective measure alternative number 4, was the one selected. And this is in terms of a carbon footprint, so it's not the entire environmental footprint. But what's important here is even for the Dean Apple area, we looked at other remedies that would have had to dig deep, would have exposed workers in the community to a lot of air emissions, and would have resulted in a very big carbon footprint to truck that material off to a Recrotoska incinerator down south. And so we were able to look at in-situ technologies that would address and be a greener cleanup. So even an in-situ thermal remedy has the ability to be a greener cleanup when you compare it to some of the alternatives that you're given. Key components of the remedy we had in Connecticut was overall for the entire site was groundwater control treatment for the long-term operations. Then we had east side components, which is the side where this ecosystem is going to be enhanced and restored. We looked at sediment removal in some tidal flats. We looked at consolidation of materials and trying to keep a lot of materials on site that I needed for cut and fill anyway, where I would have had to import clean fill. And then the other thing is we looked at ways to pump less groundwater. So we put in a hydraulic barrier wall between the river and its tributaries and the main site. And then we looked at that thermal desorption for those dark pink areas that look like little amoebas for addressing the Dean Apple areas. Key components of that same site-wide remedy, these are just some schematics to give you a visual, but we tied the hydraulic barrier wall into a very competent clay. Remember, the site was had brick manufacturing. We did a lot of consolidation and capping. And we didn't displace off-site landfills, and at the same time, we used material that we needed to for some of the grading plan that we needed for the caps eventually. We did the in-situ thermal in the Dean Apple area versus truck it off-site to an incinerator, and then we also looked at constructed wetlands on-site for the ecosystem. And then here's an example, sediment removal. You can see what we did. We used an aqua barrier. And we did that between 2013, and then we did mitigation following that up through 2015. And then you can see in the yellow highlighting, this addressed both land and ecosystems, again, conserve, protect, and restore. We did groundwater control, and again, that it absolutely improved water, but it also actually reduced energy in terms of its use. We cut the amount of water we had to pump in half. We also did the in-situ thermal remediation. The small inset slide is a pilot study we did first to look at optimum temperature and heater spacing. And the reason that's important in terms of design is we were able to optimize the remediation, have a good target temperature, and put in the right amount of energy so we didn't have diminishing returns in waste energy. And then the other thing is with respect to PCBs, we treated that very effectively as well. Here's an example of the east side on consolidation, and we did stabilization and covers, and you can see the capping, and then you can see the end use in the bottom right where we did upland metal, and then we also put in some freshwater wetlands. And then here's another slide showing some of the eco restoration, and in the slide, in the photo to the left, upper, you'll see a roadway or walkway, and that's actually the barrier wall. So we put in a barrier wall, and then we're able to use that for a trail. And again, we will invite public use of this part of the site. And then we have the freshwater wetland you'll see in the bottom right, and then you can see some of the upland meadows. And we created about six and a half acres of freshwater wetlands. We also restored some of the tidal wetlands. As far as the case study in terms of sustainability and greener cleanup BMPs, this is very important. So from a corporate perspective, what you want to see is that it's not just money saved. You can think of currency in terms of money saved, but the other thing is the currency in terms of, you know, what is your environmental footprint? And that's very, very important. And it's certainly important to the regulators, but it's important to the community. they would rather see, resources protected. They don't necessarily want to see a lot of truck traffic unnecessarily on the roadways. Obviously, that poses safety hazards too. And so what I tried to articulate in a couple bullets here is, looking at the big picture, and you may spend a little bit more money up front, perhaps in construction, doing something, but there may be a long-term payback when you look at the long-term O&M, operation, maintenance, and monitoring for a project. Notable green BMPs. So what we did is once the ASTM standard came out, we looked at that, we graded against it. We identified over 75 green BMPs that we could do. Key environmental BMPs that were utilized, and I'd like to point out here, is we consolidated over 80,000 cubic yards of cut material on-site versus truck it off-site, and we put that under engineered caps. We would have had to import a lot of clean materials, and we avoided doing that. And at the same time, we are able to reduce our groundwater extraction rates by 50%, probably closer to 60%, with the subsurface cutoff wall, that way isolating the river and not taking that water into our system. And then we could actually pump less water within the wall. We created a lot of habitat. We used about 2,500 tons of blast furnace slag. It's a manufacturing byproduct. You got to think about it as more of that net neutral in terms of using a resource and not using a natural material like bentonite or perhaps a lot more Portland cement. And there's certainly a carbon footprint for use of that. And so that was a very important ingredient for our barrier wall, and it gave us good strength, and it gave us good, it frankly, better hydraulic conductivity than just the bentonite with the cement. And any other things, we use local labor, suppliers, and labs. And if you look at the key economic BMP, you'll get a feel. So this site's in North Haven. 7% of the project purchases were within that area. Within 25 miles, that was 45% of the purchases. And then within the state of Connecticut, that was about 58% of the project purchases. And then this is another table. It says some of the same things, so I won't say too much more on this slide. Some of it was covered on the prior slide, except that on the in-situ thermal, again, I just want to point out, people will think in-situ thermal, that doesn't sound very green. But you got to think about it in the greater context of what you're trying to do on site, both for destruction and contamination. And if you can use an in-situ technology versus an ex-situ technology that may expend a lot more energy or perhaps use a lot more resources, I certainly would recommend that. And then looking at the long term, the east side of the slide where you see a lot of the green and the trails, that is to be used for a preserve. Working with some local groups, we're still working to identify exactly who that will be. For example, like the North Haven Land Trust, and they will help us in a custodial, but we'll probably always retain this property. And then on the left side or the east side of the site where it looks like a gray template or a blank canvas, we're today looking at different types of commercial uses. We've actually put an expression of interest out to developers, and we have some future uses that would be compatible with a future remedy for that site for an engineering control. And again, we would probably keep long-term ownership of that as well. I just have a couple more looking ahead to recognition. So with respect to recognition, I lost my slide. But just real quick on recognition, we are on the CLUIN. And then the other thing I'd like to mention is we received a award from the state of Connecticut, and it also was attended by EPA Region 1, and we were recognized for a Green Circle Award for sustainability for this particular project. So that should conclude everything.
Great, excellent. Thank you, Russell. A lot of good points you made there that we weren't able to squeeze in, really good ones. I appreciate it. Very, very interesting, and congratulations on the award. I was not aware of that, so that's really good news. Okay, so we have one more speaker today. It's Elise Owens. She is the EPA agency standards executive. Relatively new in the role, but she's hit the ground running. She's been helping us And one of the things she's achieved is what she's going to describe to us now. So, Elise, I'll hand it over to you.
Thanks, Carlos. I have something really exciting to unveil today. As you'll see in my slide, it's very, very exciting. But first, I want to just share some background information with you. Zooming out from the Greener Cleanup Standard, I kind of wanted to highlight how EPA looks at standards like this as a whole. As some people on the call may be aware, there are federal laws and policies that call agencies like EPA to use what's called voluntary consensus standards wherever possible, instead of recreating the wheel by making our own government unique standards. So we rely really heavily on groups like ASTM to advance our mission across all programs. These voluntary consensus standards specifically are standards that follow an open, transparent, consensus-based process, like Kate highlighted in her presentation. The laws and policies that call us to use these standards also call us to participate in the development of them. So you'll see EPA staff actively participating in the development of the Greener Cleanup Standard, as well as other standards from ASTM and similar organizations. This government use of these standards brings a lot of benefits to our agencies, as well as to our regulated communities and stakeholders. It allows us to kind of collaborate and find the best possible solutions and the most efficiency for everybody involved. One consideration that's always on our mind, though, is ensuring that our regulated communities and stakeholders have reasonable access to the documents. In general, the organizations that make these documents, like ASTM International, are private NGOs. They don't get a government subsidy, so they have to cover their costs sometimes, and that often happens through sale of the standards. So we respect the business models, but are always trying to find a way to kind of balance the need for public access. As far as using standards, then, the Greener Cleanup Standard from ASTM is a great example of how we as an agency have leveraged private sector voluntary consensus standards. As Carlos mentioned earlier in his presentation, this standard has gotten a lot of attention. It's been incorporated into assistant administrator memos, cited in Superfund guidance, and generally it's looked to as the standard for greener cleanup. If we can advance to the next slide, I'll do the grand unveiling of the special thing that we have for you guys, which is the fact that ASTM has worked with EPA and agreed to make their Greener Cleanup Standard available free of charge for 60 days for public access, public review. So anyone on this webinar, anyone in the general public can access a reference and review copy of the standard following the link that's on the slide right now, between now and the end of November. This is a great opportunity for Greener Cleanup Service providers, state and local government officials, and others to review and consider adopting or incorporating the standard into their processes. I noticed on the survey tools that we've got going on with the webinar, I think somewhere around 65% of our participants today said that they're not familiar with this standard. So hopefully that's a great opportunity for you guys to learn about that, review it, see if it makes sense to incorporate, and hopefully it does make sense to incorporate into your processes. So if you'd like a copy of the standard free of download, this is the link. I think my colleagues will be sending out some other promotional materials about this as well, if you want to share with others. So we'd like to give a big thanks to ASTM International, as well as the EPA team, for really, I think, all the hard work to get to a strong standard. And I'll hand it back to Carlos, who will mediate Q&A and discussion on the overall presentations.
Great. Thank you very much, Elise. Appreciate your help getting this agreement with ASTM in place. So as you know, that link, we will be providing it from the Greener Cleanup section on EPA.gov and the Gluin website, so make sure you continue to have access to that through late November, 60 days when it's going to be available. So with that, all the formal presentations are finished, and we reserve 15 minutes, so we're on schedule for some discussion. Mike, if you don't mind, I believe you have the capability of bringing all the the little boxes up, the little pods, and go ahead and put all 8 of them up. Thank you very much. So let's have a little bit of a discussion here. And remember, if you have questions, feel free to submit them in the Q&A box here, and we'll address those. But I thought we'd first walk through. These are questions that have been popping up. There's been great participation in them. Thank you for giving us your point of view. And we'll maybe discuss it a little bit here with Deb, and also with any questions that may be coming up. Kate, Russell, and Elise, if you have any thoughts related to them, please bring them up as well. The first one question, of course, was with respect to familiarity with greener cleanups. It's a very broad question. We have been asking of different audiences, both in small groups when we had trainings in the regional offices, state folks, on webinars, et cetera. And we definitely have seen a steady increase. Right now, the 28% of the folks are not at all familiar, and 72% of the view on the call were either very familiar or somewhat familiar. So definitely see progress there, but still some improvement to make. I'm sorry, Mike, is that you speaking?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, thanks. Russell?
I'm sorry, what was that, Carlos?
No, I there was everybody's muted except for us. I heard it sounded like somebody wanted to speak up. I was checking to see about
it. Oh, it was not me.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so the second question that we have for you guys is, what do you expect to learn? And we hope we've met your expectation this year. It seems like a high percent, about 84%. We're hoping to learn what constitutes a greener cleanup. So we've described that from a policy perspective. We've described it from a practical perspective and a process of doing it. And then we've shown you an example of a project where it has been, a greener cleanup has been conducted. So hopefully you come away with more knowledge in that area. Also, why should I use the standard? We've given you at least some EPA perspectives on why to do it, and I discussed those policy tools and practices that I mentioned earlier. So hopefully that has met your needs as well. And then how to get the standard. Of course, we have Elise's grand closing with that link to the no-cost access to the guide for that period of time. However, of course, if you want to download the PDF and the adjuncts and all that, it will have to be purchased. But now you know how to get it. Okay, so the third question we had for you was with respect to familiarity with the ASTM guide. This we kind of like expected to have a higher percent that are not familiar. In fact, that's why we have these webinars. I mentioned in my opening that we have a lot of pieces in place now with respect to policy, tools, contracts, training. We've done a lot of internal training in the agency. Grants as well. Thank you, Deb. In fact, we had an internal survey earlier this year that reached 460 EPA employees across all 10 regions. We got 460 responses, I should say. And out of the 90-something percent were familiar with greener cleanups, and on the order of 30% were familiar with the standard guide. So we still need to make some progress in the outreach, but the good thing is that a lot of the building blocks to actually be able to use it are already in place. So this confirms that expectation we had, and we'll continue to work on this, on the outreach and communication part. So who, under what programs have you been conducting the cleanups? It's pretty even between federal and state voluntary cleanup programs. My notes from earlier on, let's see, here we go, showed. Oops, thanks, Mike. That's question number four. Pretty even distribution, either one or the other or both. Not much I can say here. Part of this was a question for ourselves to understand whether we need to do more outreach and training with states or with our federal partners, Department of Defense, Department of Energy, et cetera. So we might be able to discern some of that looking at the answers in more detail. Okay, but if we go on to Question number five, have you applied the standard guide at a cleanup, and if so, under which one? So this is a very, very interesting, the results. That's another thing, point we wanted to make here. And one thing we mentioned earlier on, actually not in this webinar, but we mentioned it back in 2014, I believe it was. Today, I provided some clarification on the Superfund Greener Cleanup guidance that identifies under what conditions costs incurred in the implementation of a greener cleanup practices are consistent with the NCP and CERCLA. But you should know that we did that a similar analysis earlier on, and we included in a previous webinar, which is archived from 2014. And in that one, we walked through different programs, and we found that costs associated with use of the ACM standard guide for greener cleanups are allowable with conditions, et cetera. But under EPA brownfield cleanup grants, EPA grants awarded to state and tribal governments under CERCLA Section 128 for the development and enhancement of state response programs, and EPA grants awarded to state and tribal governments under RCRA Corrective Action Section 3011. So anyway, that's the point is that under old programs, we have application of the standard guide and implementation of green and clean, that BMPs are consistent with the authorities we have to expend those funds and conduct that work. So that should no longer be a barrier. We, you know, we have to go through that process to see that there were no inconsistencies, and we completed that process. So hopefully this chart here, we'll see some more of these going forward, because right now the not applied is still pretty high. But again, we're working on the awareness side. Okay, next slide, please. Next question. So that was number five. We go to number six. So what did you expect? I mean, what aspect of the standard guide did you see more useful? And definitely, the standardized process for pursuing green cleanups at any site. Very happy to see that, because that's of course the reason we engaged in it. And Deb described it pretty well. How it provides some transparency, some accountability, documentation of what process was followed to identify footprint reduction opportunities and what was actually implemented. And that's one of the goals of having that in place, is to avoid greenwashing. We don't want somebody to say, I did X, and when there were many other options. So the standard guide provides the means of somebody on the outside, especially if Section 8 is followed, and thus that there's a documentation like that.
Yes.
Then it provides outside parties with the information necessary to ask those questions. Okay, so that was question number six. Question number seven, with respect to the driver, what was the driver for implementing greener cleanups? This was interesting for me. Definitely footprint reduction was the highest number. We had 56 responses with respect to footprint reduction. That's great. That's ultimately that spirit of environmental stewardship. That's why we are doing this, to protect human health and environment with low environmental footprint. But there are other reasons. I was surprised to see a client request is still pretty low. I hope to see that change going forward. But again, as I said earlier, we're also hoping that consulting engineering firms start to build this into the practice and educate their clients with respect to the footprint reduction potential that comes with applying green and clean the best practices and applying the standard guide. Deb, any?
Well, I was surprised to see the cost savings was lower, because what I've heard, when people have applied the standard, when you're being surgical about your use of materials and resources, you inherently save money. And so that does happen. Without doing, a less robust cleanup, it's just about being smart. I thought we'd see more cost savings. As a driver.
Okay, so with that, Mike, if we go on to the last question, which is what I call challenges and hurdles to implementing the standard guide. Related to what I said earlier, one of the big ones is that nobody asked for it. And again, that's why we're having these webinars. We want to raise awareness amongst our peers as well as site owners. But that is not the only reason one would do it, as I said earlier. Hopefully it'll become more of a standard practice. So it'll be offered, and not only when it's requested. What else did we have in here? concerns about cost increases. Yes, we have heard that in the past. I have not yet heard of a project where the application of green cleanup BMPs was a significant cost driver. That fortunately, and we have been looking hard for that, but that has not been the case. However, I must say, maybe not necessarily different from what Deb said, that application of the guide does not necessarily always result in a cost reduction. There may be a small cost increase, but cost is not a significant driver either way. Okay, and I think those are the two I wanted to highlight. Not clear on implementation process. Hopefully today's webinar has helped. And the other one we're planning for early December will provide additional insights. That one is designed more for the practitioners. In other words, people actually are going to download a guide and apply it at a site.
It's also going to be a time because everyone will have access now to the standard, and that's been a challenge that people say, hey, this may be cool, but buying it up front without getting a chance to look at this way everyone gets a chance to look at it, and then in December, it's an opportunity to ask questions about it, and we'll be able to answer those.
Okay, so with that, we've gone over the these answers, which I think are very helpful, and they'll help us inform the types of efforts we implement going forward, especially targeting our outreach, webinars, et cetera. So we've got a lot of homework to do here.
And the only other thing is if you have applied the standards, because we saw under one of those polls that there were several that have been applied, two things. One, you can reach out to Kate Chalfin, I think, at ASTM.org and post it there. You can also reach out to Carlos or me, and we're really fascinated to see how it's been done, what your, outcomes were. And the other side is that, if you do need training, you're a larger organization, again, reach out to Carlos and me. There are ways that we can help provide training because we see that as, one of the hurdles has been getting the word out. What is the standard? How does it work?
Right. So thanks, Deb. Good point. As I've mentioned the Boeing facility, I've mentioned Russell's facility and the Pfizer facility in New England, the good work being conducted there. So if you have implemented the standard guide, we'd be happy to work with you to write it up and highlight it and give it some raises profile. The Cluin.org site, we have several, 32 profiles actually of sites where these have been conducted, and we get a lot of mileage out of those. Of course, the other big website for us is epa.gov/greenercleanups. That is a new agency-wide homepage for greener cleanups. We used to have it scattered amongst program offices and regions. Now with the agency restructuring its web presence, all of the greener cleanup content has been rolled up into epa.gov/greenercleanups. Of course, we continue to maintain Cluin because it mixes public private sector data, so we'll also have presence there. Mike, I'm not sure, I'm seeing the pod with the questions. Actually, there is a question here. So it looks like it's been addressed directly. Thanks, Russ. But with that, I think we're at 2:30, which is close to 2:30, which is the time we had identified to close this out. So thank you very much, Deb, Elise, Kate, and Russell for your participation today. Mike, thanks for moderating, and thank all of you who have participated in this webinar. We had over 200 people logged in today. We're happy to have met that target, and be on the lookout for an announcement for the next webinar sometime in early December. Thank you very much, everybody. Good afternoon.